Welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson, taking you through a beautiful Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, what's going on? Rexrode?
I got a question for you. Do you come in on the exact same moment, exact same note every time? Like, are you counting in your head, or you just go by feel?
I've never really thought about it, to be honest with you.
That's kind of impressive to me. Just kind of going.
Is it sounding like I'm coming in the same time?
No, I mean, this is the first time I thought of it. I was like, I wonder, does he like, you know, time it out, go on this exact right here, or is it just like, boom, just when I feel like, let it rip.
Robbie's a pro.
Well, that's improv, man.
Yeah,
that's how you got to be.
It's a born professional. There's no effort in it.
You're a natural, man.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess, you know.
Come on,
you hear it a little bit, and then you feel it.
That could be it. Like, it could just be like, I know that tune so well that this is when I start talking. I don't even think about it.
Like, if anyone had way too much time on their hands, they could go through all the opens and see, is it exactly the same?
Like, I'm kind of hoping it is now. There?
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna start thinking about it, and it's all gonna get jacked.
Yeah,
up.
I'm not trying to like get in your head on this at all, you know. But I mean, I think it's interesting to think about stuff like that. Like, for me, I think I might be too. Oh, okay, here we go. Got to do it right now.
No,
it's better for, you know, you're the point guard. The point guard's got to just sort of go by feel and then, you know, initiate the set.
You're right. I was a great point guard in high school.
Were you?
Oh yeah.
Creator.
About 5 points a game. Could dish the ball a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I played point guard most of my life. And, yeah, I was more of a distributor.
Yeah.
Hit a shot here and there. Played D.
I dunked once.
Did you?
That's all I cared about.
Dunked in high school?
Dunked in high school.
Nice. I was a volleyball dunker in high school.
Okay.
Like, I got dunking at age 20.
Yeah.
Which is weird, like, putting on weight, lifting weights, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But in high school, I was like so close.
Right.
And I can't quite, you know, palm the ball. Can't quite get.
For a while, like, I could dunk.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, like, for a while, I could dunk, like, a girl's ball. Because, like, in high school, I don't know if it's still the same way, because that was a long time ago. But in high school, like, the girls, the ball they played with, and the ball the guys played with, they're a little bit different size.
Oh, yeah. No, that's still the same.
Still the same?
Okay. Yeah.
So I could palm that ball, and I could dunk that from like ninth grade on.
You know, I don't think I ever tried that. I wonder, I might have been able to do that. Volleyball, no problem.
No problem. Yeah,
we had courts outside the gym though, at Prince George High School, Prince George, Virginia.
Okay. Yeah,
and those are about 9-10 probably. So you feel a little bit, you know, you can go out there and cram it.
You're like a well-traveled man, Virginia.
Yeah.
Michigan?
Well, yeah.
All over the place?
Military brat.
Okay.
A lot of moving around,
okay,
man. Yep.
So you've seen the world.
3 years in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
Dahran, Saudi Arabia.
How did I not know this?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had no clue.
I feel like I talk about it all the time. Sixth, seventh, and eighth grade in the 80s. So,
okay.
Yeah, got a lot of stories from that.
I would imagine
We don't have time in this segment to get into it, but it was actually an incredible experience. I mean, and I'm on a Facebook group now. So a few weeks ago, so we got Dahran Academy. It's where, so it wasn't an on-base thing. It was, there were kids from all over the world there.
Yeah.
And it was an English-speaking school. And we had a big Zoom call with our sixth grade teacher, Mr. Thomason, who like lives in Idaho now.
Really?
So we're talking mid-80s. Mr. Thomas in sixth grade, and we had a call with him, and it was awesome. You know, I mean, obviously, you're talking about people you haven't talked to in almost 40, like 35 years.
Yeah.
So that's one of the cool things. Complain about social media and how basically it's like Big Brother. Everybody's watching each other. Everybody's taking video of each other. You know, you can't get away from electronics, but there are some cool things about it too. And like Facebook. I don't like Facebook.
Right.
Especially when people start, you know, talking about their politics and everything. Like,
yeah.
I just want out of
here. Yes.
But that's a pretty cool thing about Facebook. You connect with people from decades ago and different continents. You know, that was pretty awesome.
And then you can watch them share their cat videos too, as well.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. That's the thing. I mean, there are cute kid pictures. Like my wife tags me every, you know, she'll put up like pictures of the kids. My kids aren't very cute anymore, but like now it's like 8 years ago. Remember when they were so cute? You know? And so like I'll click on the thing, comes to my email. Like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Okay. By the way, good luck first day of school, kids. It's the first day of school.
Okay.
So everybody's set up in the house.
Different vibe this year.
Different vibe. My fifth grade daughter is heartbroken that she's not going to school, and hopefully that happens before this school year's out. But she is like, she packed her lunch last night. She actually like packed a lunch for her to sit in the home and do schooling.
Yeah.
And everybody has their own little part of the house that they're going to be on the Zoom. Three kids, 11th, 8th, and 5th grade. And we'll see how it goes, man.
Yeah. Certainly going to be.
I'm not like I'm actually. Yeah, I'm cool like being here right now.
Yeah,
yeah. It could be a chaotic morning of getting ready to sit down.
Yes, lots of energy around the house. I would imagine. Munson, what in the world's going on with your Lakers? Like, what happened to them?
Man, look here. Let's talk about that for a second because I'm just kidding. I'm not that. Look, I'm gonna stay calm. I'm trying to stay calm. LeBron didn't play last night.
Yeah, he's out.
He was out.
Having some groin problems. He's out.
He was resting, load management. Yeah. Still, you know, still in the bubble. But it is. It's very, like I said, it's very concerning.
They didn't look good with him.
They didn't. They don't. And that's the thing. Like when you got, and this is what I said yesterday. Sometimes you get guys who just had all the momentum in the world before the pandemic happened, and then if they kind of would have went straight shot to the playoffs, then they probably would have been fine. But this long break, it affects people differently. So, and I think it affected the Lakers in a bad way. And if they get Portland in the first round, I can definitely see Portland pushing them to 7 games.
I think you're way overreacting.
You think so?
Yeah,
nah,
man. You get into, once they get into stuff that counts, I think they're going to be fine. I mean, I think Portland could probably take a game or two from them.
But it's not even just that. It's just the supporting cast. Like, if you watch that game, and this the game before last night, there were so many open, wide opportunities for a lot of players surrounding AD and LeBron. It seems like AD has to score 40 or 30 for them to get past a game. And Danny Green get wide open looks. He missed. J.R. Smith had some wide open looks yesterday. He missed. Kyle Kuzma's is stuck on Kardashian Island still, yes. Probably. So his mindset is not there, and he's not playing well. So it's the supporting cast. I don't – like, this is – it was funny to watch, like, them compare the 2010 Lakers to this Laker team. But at least with that Laker team, they had a really good supporting cast. This team really doesn't.
Well, Kuzma, you're going to be able to count on Kuzma. And I think Danny Green's going to hit those shots, don't you think? Danny Green.
No. I don't.
I wouldn't have faith in J.R. Smith to do anything weird stuff.
I saw this same Danny Green last year when the Raptors were in the playoffs. And he was awful in that series.
He was not good.
If it wasn't for Siakam, the one who stepped up outside of Kawhi Leonard and, you know, Marc Gasol played good games and Serge Ibaka. Van Vliet played a lot of good games. But if it wasn't for, like, them, they would have lost that series because Danny Green was awful. He was awful.
Well, if he's not going to hit wide-open shots, which is his entire career, then
there's really no point in being in there.
He's there for defensive purposes.
Yeah, man. He's a D&3 guy, but I don't know. I think Kuzma – Kuzma's going to be
I think not having Rondo set up the offense – and not having Avery Bradley, who can score 15 points, and on top of 15 points can play defense, I think that hurt the Lakers.
It's what happens when you sign Deion Waiters. It immediately goes downhill.
But Deion Waiters.
It's what happens.
He's okay.
I told you this 2 weeks ago.
I think out of the supporting cast that we got, I think Deion Waiters is the one I trust like a little bit more than J.R. Smith.
But you know he's going to – I mean, he'll have
–
games, and then he'll –
he'll slip off.
Yeah, he'll have some rough ones too.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But look, maybe I am overreacting because, look, I'm the same person.
He's nervous, Joe.
Yeah,
he's
overreacted when the Dodgers, like, lost a game to the Giants and they were like 2-2. And I was like, what are you guys doing? You're 2-2?
Yeah.
We split a series with the Giants? Like, they're awful. How do you split a series with the Giants? This is awful. This is going to be a terrible season.
Yeah.
And then now they've won, like, every game since
then. Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're okay. It's going to be Lakers-Clippers, right?
Yeah, but I'm still giving the edge to the Clippers.
Maybe all the stuff he said. Yeah,
I mean, look,
I'm drifting that way.
When you look at supporting cast,
Clippers are deep, man.
There is no doubt. LeBron James and AD, and I know, you know, LeBron and AD are the two best players in the league. One and three, maybe, because Giannis is up there as well. Yeah. But I think even with that, like, that supporting cast for the Clippers, not to mention they have two top 10 players on their team, it's just going to be hard to get by them. So
who's one over Giannis?
LeBron.
You still putting LeBron over
LeBron,
Giannis?
LeBron, look, until LeBron is retired and out of the league, he's number one.
Come on. At some point, he's going to be old and still in the league. He's not going to be the number one player anymore.
Giannis is going to get to the finals before I put him at one.
Yeah, but I'm just saying right now, the player, look at the player right now, just put him on a court and say, who's better? I don't know, man.
I'm going LeBron.
Giannis still can't shoot.
Yeah, LeBron can shoot a little bit better than Giannis.
Yeah, he's just –
Giannis plays better defense than LeBron.
And he just cannot be stopped when he gets going. But that's true of both of them still.
I would go LeBron.
Going downhill.
LeBron won. I have to see it from Giannis in the playoffs.
All right.
So
Fair enough.
And he hasn't shown that yet. So he's going to always be two. And the same thing for Anthony Davis. I put Anthony Davis as three, and he has definitely not showed up in the playoffs because he hadn't been in the playoffs for real. So, you know –
Fair.
Three. And then Kawhi, four.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Steph Curry, five.
What did you make of Rondale Moore opting out, focusing on the NFL? Rondale Moore, for those who don't know, Purdue wide receiver, one of the most exciting players I've seen in college football in like the last 5 years.
Oh, he's amazing.
He's awesome.
Yeah. And he's little, so we'll see in the NFL. But I think he could be a guy who goes to the league and – he's more of a yard after the catch kind of guy. I don't want to say like a Tyreek Hill. Everybody who's like small and fast now, you're
Tyreek
like
Hill.
The next Tyreek Hill.
Hey, look at him!
But he is an electric player. That's a big time loss, obviously, for Purdue, for the Big Ten, for college football.
That's a top 10 player in college football.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what is it? August 7th.
Yeah,
there will be more.
Yeah,
and you also have Greg Russo, one of the best pass rushers in college football, who just opted out at Miami. So, I mean, a lot of these guys, I think, are looking at it like, man, I don't know how this is going to go. And I don't even think – I honestly don't think with a lot of them that it's necessarily a big, you know, fear of their own health.
Right.
But it's just like, this is just a mess. I don't know how it's going to go. And I think in some cases it's like, we're going to go 6-6. You know, I think – like, I haven't seen a lot of this from the teams that are supposed to really contend.
Right.
But, like, great players on so-so teams, it's kind of like, I know I'm going to the league.
Like, what's the point?
I'm just going to – yeah. I'm going to, you know, maybe, you know, take classes and get ready. Rashad Bateman, big-time receiver at Minnesota. So, in the Big Ten, some of those sort of second-tier teams with some excellent, great NFL prospect players, you know. I think that kind of – I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think that's where you might see more of it. Sort of like teams that don't have real, legit aspirations. Virginia Tech lost a DB who's a prospect. So it's sort of like, okay, you know,
yeah.
I'm just going to – I don't want to even deal with all this stuff.
When we come back, we're going to dive into Game 4 of the Preds between the Preds. Arizona Coyotes. I'm not
between.
Speaking.
It is kind
it
of,
is between.
It's between the Preds and the Preds a little bit.
It is between the Preds and the Preds. I almost said that. We'll dive into that next. We'll get into the goaltending situation as well. All that coming up. Morning Drive, right here on ESPN 102.5. The Game.
It's not an easy decision. It's going to be a tough decision to make. We have not made that yet. But the good part of that is I think you can't go wrong with either guy. So both of them give us a chance to win, but we do have to make a decision and you have to have different factors that come into it. How, you know, you go through Juice's first three games, you know, how is he at? Where's Pekka at? We haven't practiced in a few days. So, you know, there's all things you want to be able to consider. It's not just a decision that you take lightly. I think you weigh all the factors and then you ultimately have to make the decision. So that's where the goalie situation stands. And, you know, as far as our readiness for the game, I think our players are excited to play. They're competitive people. You know, I think we've looked at some things that we felt we've done really well and maybe things we can build on in those areas. And, you know, we're prepared to play. We just got to go out and get it done.
That was Predators head coach John Hines yesterday with his media press conference. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Joe, an interesting decision today that John Hines and the Predators are going to have to make. And I think it's probably more so interesting today than it was heading into Game 3. Like, even with the back-to-back, I think most people probably thought Saros was going to go and he was going to be the guy. I still lean that way. But I do think it's worth considering Pekka-Rinne today for Game 4. And the reason I say that is this. I think Saros has been fine. I think he's played well. Is he at the top of his game? No. I think there's probably a couple saves in this series that he should have had that he didn't have. But all in all, I think he's played well. He has not been anywhere near the problem in this series. But if you're John Hines, you're down 2-1. You've played pretty well for the most part. Maybe psychologically, Pekka-Rinne comes in, gives your team a push, gives them an edge. He comes in and plays like Pekka-Rinne's top level and just doesn't allow anything. Can steal games. I don't know. It's an interesting decision. Like, I think I said yesterday, it was 90-10 for me in terms of Saros playing Game 3. I'm not that high today. Like, I think it's like maybe 70-30 in terms of Saros playing today.
Yeah, I will say that I still lean heavily toward there's no real reason to make a change, but I understand what you're saying there too. And you have to sometimes try to decipher coach speak and figure out if it's coach speak or not. I will say that the way John Hines described the decision made me think more that it's on the table.
It was different than what he said.
And I could be reading that wrong, but a coach is always going to say, yep, tough decision, we'll let you know. We don't have made a decision. Yeah, well, you'll find out. You know, this is going to be every – as long as these guys play in the playoffs, there's going to be John Hines saying, yeah, you know, we'll let them know. It's always a tough decision, et cetera, et cetera. But yesterday, it was a little bit more. He elaborated a little bit more on the process of making the decision. And as he's talking about it, I'm thinking, I think he's really thinking about doing this. And I think probably what you said there is the primary reason. Two things. The psychological just jump maybe you give a team. And, look, we know as of now that Pekka-Rinne's ceiling is still higher than Saros', just in terms of achievement. I mean, the things he's done in, excuse me, in the playoffs. He went into United Center and shut out a team at we thought at the top of the game, one seed in the playoffs that year.
Yep.
Back-to-back, you know, back-to-back games. He's done some things. He's won a Vezina that right now we don't know if Saros can do. Not saying he can't at some point, but at this point, I feel like there's, you know, again, I feel like with Saros, there's a range, and the floor is not as low as Pekka right now.
Yeah.
I think Pekka, as he's gotten older, the floor gets lower.
Sure.
But the ceiling is still there. So we've seen how he starts seasons, how he started the last season really, really well. He was great, and then it faded pretty badly. So in one day, what does that do? But what does that – you also, do you care about what it does to, like, to Saros? I don't think you can really worry about that now. I mean, again, their relationship probably helps all of this. It's like as we talk through it, I probably drift maybe more in the 75-25 Saros range, which, yeah, I was the same way going into the back-to-back. I was like, yeah, he just won you a game. And
yeah.
I think he's young. You don't have the wear and tear. But now, because you lost the last game, and again, one goal. I mean, you want him to stop the Taylor Hall.
That's one he's got to shot. Have. I went back and watched it again yesterday. He's got to stop that puck.
Yeah.
It's Taylor Hall. I get it. He's a great player. He's got to have that one.
And it's a situation that should not be there.
Sure.
Because Craig Smith decided to just obliterate someone in a, you know, when you're down
for
a
no
goal
reason.
With 5 minutes left. But, yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's something you want him to stop. You want him to stop the breakaway in game one. I don't know. Is there another one that you really have a problem with? I mean, I can't think of one.
No, I mean.
And he's had some big-time saves, too.
And even the breakaway, like, yeah, you want him to stop it. That's a situation where you want your goalie to bail you out. But the other side of that argument is you just gave someone a shorthanded breakaway who may be the best player in the league in terms of executing on a shorthanded breakaway. I think Grabner has 22 shorthanded goals since 2010, which leads the league. So
that's his thing.
Yeah, that's his thing.
And you set him right up. And so, but, hey, you could also say, well, but maybe Pekka stops him.
Maybe.
I mean, you can like all the stuff about Pekka should have been in there after game three. It wasn't about that at all. But I get the thought here of doing it. I still struggle to get all the way to, okay, thanks, Saros, you're in. I don't know. What would the team think? What would it do? Would it do anything for these guys if they went this way?
I don't think so. I mean, the only thing I could think of with, hey, you know, Pekka's got so much respect in that room that they know that this is going to be one of his last shots. He's got 1 year left on his deal after this one. Maybe it galvanized. Maybe he makes, you know, three or four huge saves early on, and that galvanizes this group, and they come together in a way that they haven't so far in these playoffs, even though I think they played pretty well for the most part. That's really the only thing I could think of. But, I mean, you also have to keep in mind there could be some cons to this too. I mean, let's think about this for a second. You're in Edmonton. It's a different situation. You played Tuesday. You played Wednesday, and you didn't practice yesterday. So Pekka really hasn't been on the ice, I assume, since Monday, taking shots. Now, I'm no NHL goalie. I don't know how big a deal that is or not. I'd probably have to ask Pekka or Chris Mason or somebody who's done it before. But how much does that weigh in? Like, if you're John Hines, you're looking around, and Pekka hasn't been facing shots other than the warm-up in games, which those shots are not designed to test the goaltender. How much does that factor in if he hadn't really seen shots coming at him since Monday? And here we are on Friday, you're asking him to play a game.
Yeah, it's not like he could, like, I mean, I assume you got all these teams there. You've got limited facilities. You can't, like, sneak out and
there's a chance yesterday he got on the ice with, like, a small group of, like, players. I don't know. Maybe he took some shots yesterday. But they didn't practice yesterday. I do know that.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much that weighs in. And then, you know, when you're weighing pros and cons here, like, if you get peak Pekka-Rinne, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. If you don't, and you get the version of Pekka-Rinne that showed up at times this year and has showed up at other times in bigger games, Winnipeg in Game 7 comes to mind, all of a sudden you're out of the game before it really even begins. Like, you're down 3-0. So I think what you said earlier and the way you described it is perfect. I agree with it. The ceiling for Pekka is still higher. I think if he comes in and he plays at his peak level, right now he's still the better goalie. But the floor is also much lower. With Saros, I think, like you said, there's a range there that you're comfortable with. I'd still lean Saros in this game, but I understand why there's thought out there, both in the fan base, and I think there's legitimate thought with John Hines and the coaching staff as well in terms of actually considering putting him in this game.
I think some of it is taking the temperature of your team a little bit. Like, if you actually think these guys need something. I mean, I assume this would be a jump to them, at least some of them, even though they like both guys. You know, Saros has been around years now, but still, Pekka-Rinne goes way back.
Yeah.
I don't know. That to me might push him more in that direction. But, yeah, you don't want all of a sudden. I mean, look, if you go that way and you get the bad Pekka-Rinne, and you're like, you know, you've been really controlling this team. You basically just have to finish some of your opportunities and not have the mistakes, and you're going to beat them.
Right.
Then you're open for second guessing.
No question about it. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds. When we come back, what lineup changes outside of the goaltender would we make for the Predators heading into game four? We'll talk about it next. It's Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes you get in situations where, let's say, you're not playing well, or you're getting outworked, or, you know, like you said, a lot of the process things aren't there. If you look at, okay, if we play this game, you know, three times, are we going to give ourselves a chance to win? And let's say the answer is no, then lots of times it's easier to make lineup changes. But I think when you go through the games and you feel like you've done some good things, the matchups have been good, you know, that it's a little bit harder to make changes. It doesn't mean that we're not going to make changes. You might insert a guy or two into the lineup. That's a possibility. It's a harder decision when your team's played well. I think the other part is you could make tweaks within the guys. You might not make lineup changes, but you may adjust the pieces that are in the lineup, which also could be a couple line combinations. It could be a D pair, whatever that may be. So that's the process you go through. We've talked about it after the game. We've talked about it this morning. You go through the video and this afternoon we're going to have to make some decisions, but I don't think any of them will be necessarily easy.
How's Preds head coach John Hines talking about the process that he and his staff will have to go through in determining what the lineup looks like today in game four? Welcome back, Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. Joe, I kind of look at the way this series has gone so far, and obviously there's one line that sticks out in terms of changes that might need to be made, and of course that's the second line with Duchesne and Turris and Granlund. But it's not like the Predators are out there just getting run off the ice. As a matter of fact, I think at times the opposite is true. I thought they were in total control of that game in Game 3. And when that happens, when you're in a situation like that where you're playing well, you're feeling good about your game for the most part, minus the mental mistakes that we've talked about a lot, it's sometimes as a coach, I think it could be difficult to shake things up just for the sake of shaking things up. Like sometimes you just got to trust the process. That's a lot easier to do in an 82-game regular season where you've got time to let things develop. And if you play the way the Predators have played in this series for the most part, you're going to like your results over an 82-game season. It's going to go pretty well for you. 5-game playoff series, you get a hot goalie, all of a sudden you're going back home. And that's what happened to the Predators in Game 3. They ran into a hot goalie. So it's interesting today, I think, to kind of think about the challenges of John Hines and the coaching staff. What do you do to change? Because I don't anticipate like anybody else is coming in. Like, I don't think Blackwell's coming in or Trennan's coming in. If they're going to make changes today, my guess is that it's just going to be mixing and matching some lines around. I don't think that they're bringing anybody else in because I don't know who they could bring in at this point in a role that that player would play that makes a huge difference.
Well, the clear answer here is to bench Matt Duchesne. Bench him, and maybe bench him for like about a half of next season too.
Maybe send him home.
Yeah, right. Make him sit in his room. No TV, no electronics, no phone. Seriously, we should get Martell on here to make fun of him.
I know.
Can we do that? I hope you're listening, Martell.
There's no way Martell's up yet, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, good then. We can really rip on him then. Look, I agree with you. I think the one guy who would maybe have been moved out for a Blackwell or a Trennan would be Austin Watson. Austin Watson has been doing his job, doing exactly what you want from Austin Watson. He's out there rattling skulls and he doesn't look to me, I don't know, he looks a little bit quicker to me.
A little bit, yeah.
Than he did in the regular season.
Yeah. Maybe it's injury related. Maybe he's healthy. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that happens with a lot of guys when you get a break like that. So, like that line, Yarncroke, Sisson, I mean, the third line, they're doing a good job. I guess you could say, man, you'd like a little more. But then again, I mean, game two to me was a Nick Bonino game.
Yeah. I still think there's more there from Grimaldi and Smith.
Yeah.
There's more there that they need to give. Bonino's been fine.
And again, aside from like the mistakes, because I mean, you could make the case that the Smith mistake was really the one that was the worst of the three in the third period that lost the game. But yeah, it's just really, do you like how the second line is playing? Is it just a matter of they just need to finish? Or do you feel like that just needs some kind of a injection of something? Again, the thing that it's lacking is what the top line has, which is physical, brutish power that Johansson and Forsberg are putting on the Coyotes, and then they have little Victor Arvidsson going fast.
Yeah.
And it's something to behold, and it's something for the Coyotes to fear. The second line, I think they were better in the last game, but do they need something? And then what would it be? Who would it be? Like you've said before, you've already said, like Craig Smith, you put him in for Granlund. How is it changing?
What's changing there? Not much.
Again, Turris is the guy I think has flashed the most of that line. And almost got rewarded with the game-winning goal. And think of what that could have done for him after all that has happened in his tenure in Nashville. But I don't know. I don't see an obvious change there. And I think if you don't make a change, that's also kind of a – just like, you know, maybe Pecorine and goal is some kind of a psychological jump, you hope, if you do that as a coach. If you don't make a change to the lineup, I think that's also a comment. Like, you guys are doing the right things, because you don't want, as a coach, you don't want guys to feel the pressure too much today.
Sure.
You want them to keep playing their game and not freak out about you have to score the first goal. Not freak out if they don't score the first goal. And there's a ton of pressure on this team today.
There is so much
pressure.
And look, that second line, I thought they were really good in game two. I thought they had a lot of good looks. Game three, I thought they were okay, but Duchesne and Granlund specifically, just 5-on-5, it's not there for me right now with them. But the problem is, you look around the rest of the lineup, like, what do you really change about it? Because my guess would be you're not moving Duchesne to the fourth line because it really just serves no purpose to do that. We've seen them move Kyle Turris to the fourth line many times this year, and it effectively just takes his game away. Even if you put him where his natural position is at center ice, you know, if he's playing with, no disrespect to these guys, but if he's playing with Austin Watson and Callie Yarncroke, those guys offensively are just not at the level they need to be at in terms of making Kyle Turris an effective player. So, like, if you move Turris down and you bring Sissons up and put him on the wing, yeah, Sissons probably brings more of that, like, crash element to getting in towards the front of the net. And maybe that works. Maybe that helps Duchesne and Granlund. I don't know. But then you're basically taking Turris and putting him in a role where I'm not sure how much use he's going to be to you at that point. So that's the problem with switching lines. There's not really an obvious solution that you think, okay, well, yeah, you could just move Turris down and then, I don't know, Callie Yarncroke can come up and play on the second line. Well, if Callie Yarncroke comes up and play on the second line, what about his game is different in terms of making that line more physical to deal with? Nothing.
Yeah, Sissons is the one guy who...
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's got a little bit of skill to him, but a crash element to his game as well. So maybe that's the move they make. I don't know. I'm kind of, the more I think about it, inclined to think they're just not going to do anything. They're going to leave everything the same and just hope that, you know, Duchesne, Turris, Granlund dig deep and find a way to get it done. Like, at the end of the day, that's almost what you have to do with this group. You've committed at this point. You've committed to Turris. You've committed to Duchesne. I know Granlund's about to be a free agent. That's $20 million on that line. We're not really at the point anymore where you can just try to mix and match all the time. They're either going to get it done or they're not, in my opinion. And then if they don't, you can reevaluate from there in the offseason. But I think after the way that game went the other day, if Matt Duchesne specifically today does not come out like a house on fire and look like he is the most determined guy on that ice, that will be concerning to me, because you know he's heard everything the last couple of days. I mean, there's this fiasco yesterday all over the place about, you know, the media stuff and the Zoom availability yesterday. I mean, he has to be aware of that, and he has to be aware that his mistake cost his team a goal and potentially cost his team a game. So I would assume today that he's going to come out and be extremely motivated. Now, what that translates to on the ice, I have no idea. But I would assume he's going to come out and you're going to be able to notice a different gear in his game today.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think so. You want to see – we talked the other day about – I don't remember who said it, but, you know, one thing about Duchesne's really strong in the puck, and that's something that I don't think we've seen enough in this series. So you want it to translate into some little bit of anger, physicality. You don't want it to translate into one of my favorite hockey cliches, gripping that stick too tightly, because you've got to – you know, you can't, when you're a skilled player, you have to have a certain level of, you know, freedom and just sort of letting the game come still. But, yeah, I think in terms of getting his body to certain parts of the ice and just being more competitive, not grabbing people from the ice, but hitting somebody, you know, trying to get in there, get close to the net, I think he can do more. And this, you would think, would translate into that.
When we come back, Elliot Friedman joined Darren, Donick, and Chase yesterday and had some interesting comments about Matt Duchene. We'll react to that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, you watch in real time. It's very close. I didn't have any clue I was offside at the time. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's a mistake. I mean, it's not a play that, you know, I don't think I make very often where I just go offside on a rush like that. But at the end of the day, I take responsibility for it. And it was unfortunate that, you know, it cost us a goal, I guess. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think we did a lot of good things in the game. And we got another one tomorrow. And we have a chance to win tomorrow and push it to game five. And we can't really live in the past. I know, you know, I don't think us as a team really thought much about it after that. And there's lots of times in games where goals get disallowed and you just got to, you know, bounce back. So it's no different for myself or for the guys.
That was Matt Duchene yesterday in his Zoom availability with the media talking about the offside play in game three. Welcome back, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad here on Morning Drive. Joe, I hear that, and first off, good on Matt Duchene for taking responsibility for it. But it kind of seemed like the, you know, I didn't even know I was offside. Well, yeah, that's the problem. You got to be aware of where your body is on the blue line like that. And, you know, we described the play yesterday. It's not the offside part of it. It's, look, you're going to get offside a lot. If you're rushing up the ice, it's a 3-on-2, and you're trying to beat the skater coming behind you, and you can't stop because if you do, you might as well just turn around and go back the other way because they're going to catch you and the play's not going to be there. That's one thing. This situation where you're just hanging out on the blue line waiting for Roman Josi to enter the zone, there's no one around you. There's really no one around Josi at that point. It's just inexcusable. So I get what Duchene's saying there in terms of, you know, this happens in hockey. Sometimes you're offside. Sometimes you have goals that are disallowed. Yeah, it does happen. This is a pretty magnified moment. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more emphasis put on it than I saw.
Yeah, well, first of all, he talked, so that was good.
Yeah, good on him.
So, and the Preds made him available after he wasn't available after the game, which, of course, was a large point of discussion yesterday, and I think it should have been. And he took responsibility. Yeah, look, I think Matt Duchene is a guy, I think, in any, whether it's about him or someone else, he very much goes to the positive.
Sure.
Nothing wrong with
Nothing
that.
Nothing wrong with that.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're a Predators fan who's still aching over this, you probably want to hear a little bit more of a mea culpa there. But that's the thing. Like, Roman Josi after the game was like, what mistake? What, offside?
They didn't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But, again, it's not that it was an offside. It's the type of offside.
Right.
That is why it stood out, along with the situation, the time of game, what it took off the board, what happened after that, where the series is. I mean, all the ramifications that I know you and I both felt right then, like, you can see where this could go.
Yeah.
Not that the Preds just collapse and let it happen, but you just – it feels like in this game sometimes, just like if a goalie – makes four or five unbelievable saves. Gosh, you know they're going to go down. You're going to go down and score on the other end,
yeah,
like Johansson did in game two, right? There's some things that you just expect to happen, even if it's not a linear A to B thing. And we could feel it right when it happened, and that's how it happened. So, but at the same time, if you're Matt Duchene, you also have to – you do have to put it out of your mind. You want to, like you said last segment, be on fire in this game. But if you're thinking about that, I don't see how that helps you.
No question about it. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet joined Darren, Donick, and Chase yesterday and had some interesting thoughts on both the offside play from Matt Duchene and his series as a whole. Here's what Elliot Friedman had to say.
Look, he's one of your highest paid players. He carries a big ticket. And with that comes the expectation that at this time of year, he's going to be a difference maker. And, you know, yesterday is the kind of play where, you know, that goal got disallowed, where, you know, they're not going to say it publicly because nobody wants to embarrass anyone publicly, but you pull your hair out. or, you know, in the case of John Hines, you tug your collar or something like that. You know, like, that can't happen. You know, it wasn't like somebody was barreling at him to knock him offside. There was no excuse for that to happen. And, like, you know, everybody makes mistakes. We've all been there. We all have moments that you look at and say, boy, you know, what was I thinking or how did I get that wrong? But I just think that you have to expect a lot of him. You should demand a lot of him. He's here to win these kinds of games. And that's a huge mistake in that moment. And I would expect tomorrow in game four, he should come out like a house on fire. He should want to come out and say, that was on me. It sucks. And I'm going to do everything I can to fix it. But the expectation should be high on Duchesne. You know, when you're one of the top paid players, that's life in the big city.
That was Elliot Friedman on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday. And Joe, I think I agree with every last syllable of what he just said there. I mean, the expectations for this guy, they've got to be high. I mean, we've talked about for 3 years the Predators' pursuit of Matt Duchesne. Whether it's been, you know, something everyone thought would happen or not, you know, Matt Duchesne's been the guy. Can you think about what the Predators would be like if they had Matt Duchesne? And I get it. Like, I think last summer it got, like, way blown out of proportion in terms of, like, the fever around here and what the expectations were. I mean, you had, you know how social media is. You had some people on Twitter last year, you know, acting like Matt Duchesne was the second coming of Connor McDavid. Like, he's not that type of player. But he is a good player. He is a guy that should be able to come in and help your team from a scoring depth standpoint, give them a second line that is dangerous, that could take over in certain occasions in games. And that hasn't happened in this series. And that's what the expectation should be. And that's what, not only from the fans, but from the media, but even more importantly, that's what the expectation should be from Duchesne himself. I want to see him play like that today because I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. And look, I mean, he is the focal point of today. If fair or not, it's more than – and honestly, that line already was – by the time you got to that third period of game three, it was like, look at the pressure right now. What do they need? It's been eight periods, and that line has not been on the board yet. Here it is. And then they did it. And then that – again, like Hal Gill said yesterday, mistakes all game. And there's no doubt about it.
Sure.
It's a game of mistakes. Like he said, if there were no mistakes, it'd just be people skating up and down and it'd be the most boring thing in the history of the world, right? It's everything is a reaction to a mistake and people taking advantage of it. But that mistake is extraordinary to me. So there's a lot of pressure on him in this series and then moving forward because – of all the different things we're going to speculate on if they don't get out of this, if they don't win today and then go win Sunday and change the conversation again, then we're going to be talking about what David Poile can do. I don't think Matt Duchesne is realistically any kind of consideration. They just paid him a year
sure.
ago. He has not been an $8 million player this year.
Not close.
Like the only way – He comes close to that as if all of a sudden he goes on a tear and they go on a run in the playoffs because that is where you make your money, right? I mean, that's where what you get paid for. It's what Johansson got paid for. Johansson right now is rapidly moving closer to earning his salary.
Right.
Although it's also
– where is this in the regular season?
Yes. But Duchesne, not close. But you know he's coming back. So – there is a lot of pressure on him now. There's pressure on him to be more of an impact player in the future. And if not, you know, then it was a bad signing. Everyone was overblown how good he was. He's past his prime, whatever. All those things are on the table right now. I do like Matt Duchesne wore the cool Vols hat yesterday. Was that hey, guys, I'm one of you. Come on, don't be mad at me.
He did it in training camp, too. It was a different Vols hat. So he's got like a collection of balls. And I saw yesterday, man, it made some of the Vanderbilt fans really upset.
Well,
it really did.
I tweeted out a picture of it, and I got some Vanderbilt fans that, oh, now I get what the problem is.
I mean,
you got to love rivalries.
Yeah. That's what my dad said, too. He's an Alabama fan. So
that's right. The Bama fans, too. They can get it on that, too.
They just kept going. Look, today, I mean, it is what it is today. I agree to a certain extent with what you said earlier, like you don't want Duchesne like thinking about the offside play and harping on it too much, because I guess if it's just consuming every thought in your mind, you're not going to be freed up. You're not going to play well. I do want him thinking about it a little bit if I'm the Predators. I want him thinking about, hey, yeah, that one's on me. I'm not going to go as far to say it totally cost them the game, because there were other things they could have done even after that play to win the game. So I think it's unfair to say it totally cost them the game. It played a big part in them losing that game in Game 3. It just did. That's the fact of it.
I mean, how many times in a hockey game, in a tie game in the playoffs, do you think whoever scores next is going to win?
Yeah.
How many times are you right? A lot
of times. So, I mean.
So you're right. You can't directly say that's it, but
it's a big deal.
It goes a lot.
It's a big deal. I want him thinking about it a little bit, because hopefully if Matt Duchesne is the type of competitor that you think he is when you make that signing, that drives him. If he was, now he should be driven anyway. It's an elimination game. You're making $8 million a year. You've had a pretty bad series. That should be enough to motivate you anyway. But at this point, based on what I've seen in this series, any extra thing that could get him going, if I'm a Predators fan, I'm all for.
And the thing is, it's like you all the stuff I said, you know, the big picture of the money and what people are saying about you and all these things, that's stuff that can hurt a player. You don't want to think about that. But you simply in your mind say, I owe these guys something, and every shift I'm going to do what I can to pay the debt. And if you think simply that way, then it should help you.
When we come back, another development in the Vic Beasley situation with the Tennessee Titans. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.